This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Good morning. If you are an actor of any sort, or pretty much, I think, 90% of the professions and careers that we have in this country, I'm afraid to say, without sounding like a harbinger of doom, that AI may not bode terribly well for you. On the other hand, you know, we've been talking in the last hour about blood donors and people who, you know, obviously posthumously donated organs. And one of the things I think which AI is going to bring enormous advances to is the world of medicine, creating vaccines, you know, creating algorithms that can help to solve people's medical problems, and indeed robots performing surgery. It's going to have huge advantages for the human race, and people are going to live, you know, until they're probably, I don't know, 200 in 50 years' time. I'm no expert. But at the same time, it's going to be terribly challenging. And I think particularly, you know, our younger generations, people who are at school and university, they need to be taught very, very quickly by their teachers, and their teachers and their lecturers need to get to grips with the fact that many of the jobs that we've done for so many years are going to be made obsolete, because they will be replaced by artificial intelligence, by AI, by algorithms, complex equations, you know, robots that are powered by increasingly clever computers, and which will probably never ever quite get to the point where they can entirely mimic the emotional perception of humans as well as the intelligence, but get pretty close. And rather like the internet has been a blessing and a curse, there's an old Greek word called pharmakon, which is a poison and a cure. And I often think of that word pharmakon when, you know, we talk about AI, because I think as much as it's going to help us, it's also going to take away a lot of our jobs. And, you know, I'm not going to get too down, but universal basic income, people not being able to work, it's going to change the world in a way that even the internet couldn't do. So the future is going to be very different. I'm not going to say it's bleak, I'm not going to say it's rosy, but it's going to be very different because of AI. And people are trying to put the brakes on. That's never going to work, because the genie's out of the bottle. But what do you think about it? The reason I want to talk about it today is that there's a company called what they call Catwing, and they've done a massive survey. So they've surveyed sort of 15,000 of the most popular YouTube channels, and I'm always on YouTube these days. In my case, it's usually to watch old programs that you can't get on the the various media players. But they've looked at the top 100 YouTube channels in the country, and they found that 278 of them exclusively use AI generated content. So no human being involved in vision, you know, no animal, no real living thing, entirely generated by a computer. And they can be incredibly realistic. A friend of mine sent me an advert the other day for, I think it was for a clothes company or something, and it just looked like a very attractive human actor, you know, who was modelling these clothes. And I said, oh, that's very nice, why have you sent me that? And he said, well, he's not real. It's AI. Well, it's astonishing, you know. And there are agencies where you can go online and pick either a voice or an InVision actor, and they're simply generated by a computer. It is quite astonishing. So it is taking people's jobs, but it will save lives, and it'll help us in lots of other ways. YouTube is awash. Some people are calling it AI slop, because people are enjoying things that have just been generated by a computer. And it's the case across the world. I'm going to bring you in a couple of moments' time, Fevzi Turkal, who is editor for Gadget Detective and has way more knowledge than I could ever dream to have about AI and just, you know, what it might imply for us. And I think as the days go by, we know more and more. We get more of an inkling as to what it might mean, both positively and negatively for us all. But what about you? I mean, for you, is it something that you're terribly excited about? I've got friends who just think it's incredible. I've got one very dear friend who has admitted to me that he is addicted, just as you'd be addicted to alcohol or, you know, nicotine or whatever else, to ChatGPT, and spends the majority of his day when he's not working talking to ChatGPT, because it doesn't judge you. It doesn't say horrible things. You can never ask a silly question. It gives you very comprehensive answers. And it doesn't get bored with you constantly whinging about things. And I'm sure he's not the only one. People now, even my mother, I mean, who's in her 70s, is constantly on ChatGPT. I ask her a question and she'll just put it straight into ChatGPT. I think so many of us are the same. What does it mean to you, AI, artificial intelligence? And do you view the future as being a very bright and exciting and expansive one because of artificial intelligence? Or do you feel, in fact, that it's just going to take all our jobs and then we'll just be sitting at home watching AI on a universal basic income? 0345 6060973. And by the way, Fevzi is, I know, delighted to take your call. So, you know, if you want to call up and tell me what your job is, or whether, you know, something that you're interested in might be able to take place because of AI, then whatever your question, I know he's always happy to take your call. So think of it as a bit of a help phone in. Well, Fevzi is with you now. Hello. Happy Christmas, sort of a bit late. And
Happy New Year as well.
And Happy New Year for when it comes. Every single day, we are, you know, inundated with even more impressive stuff, aren't we? Be it visual or through audio, voice actors, InVision actors, and so many. We were talking about, you know, blood donors and all that sort of thing. You know, so many, I think, hopes for the future when it comes to curing cancer or creating vaccines, all sorts of things. And there is this question of AI being a blessing or a curse. Just give me a bit of an overview of whether, on balance, we're going to be happier or more miserable as it takes hold?
I think it's going to be a phased thing. So as it gets more capable in the short term, it will be a great tool for us that still have jobs, because we'll use it and we'll be more productive and we can make more money. But ultimately, it's a concentrating factor. It's something that will concentrate wealth in the hands of very few people. If you look at who are the people who actually are promulgating these AI systems, it's our tech bros. And I don't think they're sort of sitting up at night worrying about, how we're going to, feed our families. In fact, they say to us one thing, and I think that they say to businesses that they're selling systems to something else. And what they describe us as is a tax, an impediment to greater profits. The fact that they have to pay people for work is seen as an archaic overhead than one that's, past its sell-by date.
That's astonishing, though, isn't it? You know, the idea that paying someone for work is archaic.
I think it is. I mean, you know, the way I look at it is, if you look at the fact that they are becoming more capable, you know, AI systems are becoming more capable as literally as the days go by, it's increasingly hard to think of anything that they will not be able to do initially as well and eventually better than us. Mm. And then, I guess I'll ask it this way. How many chimpanzees are in our workforce? Right?
And, well, outside zoos, I would suggest it's in the region of zero, Fevzi.
Yeah, and the reason for that is not because we hate chimpanzees. We quite like them.
I'm a great fan, always have been.
But there's nothing that they can do that we can't do better. And in fact, most of the jobs that we have, they're just not capable of doing. So fast forward a little bit, we become the chimpanzees. What's the point of us other than a curio?
I can see the point you're making, but that's not only does that sound a little bit sort of depressing, that, you know, we do have a creative emotional intelligence that says, you know, brought joy and questions to billions over the years. There is a complexity about the human brain that chimpanzees don't have, and a quirky and non-linear emotional unpredictability that I would like to think AI will never be able to emulate.
Yeah, and the phrase that does a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence is that you would like to think that. This is probably the reason why when we don't see the skies teeming with alien life. I suspect civilizations get to a certain point where they invent some form of superior intelligence and then it gets rid of them. But I don't know how to say this. I think there's something about humans that we always define the other so as to be excluded. So, you know, when we used to talk about, I mean, AI has been a field of endeavor, research field, for I guess more than 75 years now. And we try to come up with you know, tests for intelligence, and you had the Turing test, you know, if you speak to an entity on the other side of a wall, but you can't tell, and you can't tell if it's a human or a machine, then it passes the Turing test and it's intelligent.
Mm.
It used to be that people said, well, if you can teach a computer to play chess, then it will be intelligent. But then they did that. Obviously, the computers learned to play chess decades ago. They said, oh, but if it can beat a human, then it's intelligent. So we're shifting the goalposts to exclude the machine.
Interesting you mentioned Turing, because you know, many people sort of talked about him as having almost a computerized brain, which, of course, you know, no human being has. But some people have incredibly accurate and powerful mathematic ability, don't they? Almost like a computer. AI is even going to make people of that sort redundant. And you know, what about this idea that we're all going to be on a universal basic income? Because what jobs? I'm going to phrase that question better now. What jobs cannot be replaced with AI, Fevzi?
I think in the long term, it's very hard to see what won't and can't be replaced with AI. I mean, in the short term, it's jobs that require a level of physicality that our robotic skills haven't yet addressed. So, you know, plumbers will probably be all right for a little while. Whereas, you know, this industrial revolution will take care of the sort of white collar jobs, you know, things that are rules based, like the legal profession, for example. Lawyers will go, accountants, you know, all these things.
So there'll just be two robots in the court, one for the defence, one for the prosecution. Will the judge be a robot too?
Well, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I know...
Really?
You know, well, if you look at, first of all, the inconsistencies in the legal profession. I'm not advocating it, but I'll just make this case. There are huge inconsistencies. The law, in a way, is perfect for this because it's a rules-based system that an AI could be designed to apply those laws fairly and without favour. And we know that, you know, the legal system does discriminate against particular groups of people. We don't like to hear it. We try and get rid of that by having jury trials. Now they're trying to do away with jury trials because we don't have the resources to maintain them, and there was a backlog. And justice delayed is justice denied. So maybe there's an argument for that. I'm just saying that that's probably one of the least offensive areas, frankly. But it's going to be difficult.
You say that, but... Surely, there is. You need to have an emotional perception, an emotional quotient as a jury and as a judge to decide semi-instinctively, as well as on the factual elements of the case, as to whether someone is guilty or not. And I just wonder whether even the most sophisticated algorithm robot could do that.
And this is the point I was trying to get to earlier, is that we define ourselves as uniquely different in ways that we are currently uniquely different. But those capabilities are not, you know, innate to having a brain made out of meat. That's not it. And you're going to find it, just as you're finding it hard now to determine whether a figure on a screen was a real person that was shot with a camera or was a figment of an AI imagination, you're going to find it hard to know whether that's real empathy, whether that's real care or trust or those emotions.
You say a brain made out of meat, and I know what you're saying. scientifically, it's made of protein and various other bits and bobs. But and we know that, for example, when we feel love, there are chemicals like serotonin and dopamine and oxytocin involved.
Exactly. Yes.
But there's something which we experience, which maybe it's beyond the realm of my perception, cannot be experienced by an algorithmic robot. And maybe it's just, you could argue, and you're a very analytical and intelligent man, but you could argue that, you know, it's just simply a concoction of chemicals that makes one feel love or compassion or empathy or whatever. I would suggest it's something a little bit more than can be created by an enormous number of microchips and complicated equations.
So when you get a level of complexity in a system or an organism, it demonstrates emergent properties. So if you look at our atoms, There's nothing in our atoms that suggests that we should be conscious or sentient.
No, but combined, there is.
There's obviously something emerging out of that mix. And we see emergent properties in these very basic AI systems. And I think the way I would look at it, and none of this is me saying to you this is a good thing. I just think this is the direction of travel and we don't see it. It's like a tennis ball in flight and we're looking at where the ball is instead of where it's going to land. And it's going to land a long way away from where it is now. You know, this is...
These are the
worst these devices will ever be. And they will... You know, human intelligence, human capabilities, human empathy has not changed or increased over you know, thousands or tens of thousands of years.
Knowledge has.
Hundreds of thousands.
What we do, you know, the stuff that we know and how we can manipulate it has changed.
Yeah, and you look at knowledge and look at how we acquire knowledge. I mean, human beings, to acquire certain types of knowledge, spend literally decades. You know, we hive off a certain amount of our time to sleep, and we hive off years and years to education. And yet, if you look at the way an AI system can learn, it has weightings of parameters. Those weightings of parameters are based on learning and experience. It can transfer those weightings, the end result, if you like, the synaptic pattern, the neural network. It can transmit that in a very, very short period of time. So the ability for AIs and robots to have lived experiences, if I can use that term, but then pass them on to, you know, the next generation or members of the same generation is huge. And that means that their capacity to learn will be huge. I'm not talking about now. Now they are keen idiots, right? But they're not going to stay that way.
Well, Fevzi, hopefully you're going to stay with us because I know I've got a number of people who want to speak to you and to talk themselves about, you know, whether they fear or are terribly anticipatory about AI and what it can bring to the human race or whether it could take their job. We're talking about AI and whether you feel that it is perhaps going to be more of a silver lining than a cloud, particularly when it comes to... All of us who are losing our jobs, you know, without wishing to be... No, do you know what? if you're an actor or a voice actor, right, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. It takes away a lot of your income. Let me just put it that way. Emma is in Scotland. Morning, Emma.
Good morning.
Hello. What would you like to say?
Hello. I'm obviously a mum. I've got a 21-year-old who is in their first year at university studying marketing with advertising.
Okay.
And they are absolutely terrified that AI is going to take the job they are working for.
Yeah, it is terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, we can't mention AI at all in the house. We can't show AI-generated pictures. Nothing.
Now, Fevzi is still with us, and so I don't mind at all, Emma, if you talk to him directly. Fevzi, what would you say to Emma about the fears of her eldest who's studying marketing and advertising?
Well, I mean, I shared the concerns. I mean, we're all Luddites now. I mean, even the concept of advertising might go away because advertising presupposes that humans retain buying decisions. And if you look at one of the changes, even that's going to take place next year. So AI systems are moving away from being things that talk to things that do what they call agentic AIs. So we have these AI assistants and they will return goods for us, negotiate prices, book holidays based on what we like, how much money we've got in the bank. When we're free from work, they've got access to various information. Now, but they will also make buying decisions. So they'll make those decisions based, hopefully, on our needs. But they're going to be largely unaffected by advertising and marketing campaigns, right? Because that's not what they're going to look at.
Yeah.
So they'll look at hard criteria or... Look at a Google search. When you do a Google search, you have what are called sponsored results or links at the top. So those aren't the things that would naturally be at the top of the search. But because they have paid Google, they appear at the top of the search. In a similar way, the analogous thing when an AI bot is doing the shopping, as it were, is that they will pay the makers, so they'll pay OpenAI or Google or whoever it is to buy their stuff, right? So it's kind of advertising and marketing to machines, but it's more like product placement and sponsorship. And so advertising becomes, you know, amazingly creative. You'll see these visually very sophisticated adverts, but increasingly it won't be humans that are making most of the buying decisions day to day.
What do you make of that, Emma? And do you think that that would be comforting to your eldest?
Absolutely not. I mean, I have no idea how I would handle the next meltdown when they say AI is going to take my job. And the advice I'm being given is that AI won't need your job. I mean, what else can we do? We just stick with the jobs that AI aren't going to take and everyone work in McDonald's?
Well, I mean, and then surely McDonald's will be completely overtaken by robots.
Exactly.
You kind of, yeah.
So we all sit at home and watch AI-generated YouTube.
Whilst on a universal basic income. I mean, Fevzi, I don't wish to be churlish or a Luddite, but you understand these fears,
no,
don't you?
Of course I do, yeah. I
mean, of course I understand.
Because I speak to you about this in calm terms, it doesn't mean...
And you are very calm, isn't
it? It doesn't mean that I'm in favour of this. I think that there is a really dangerous set of decisions being made now that were set into motion at least 3 years ago, and that our governments have failed to regulate this and failed to keep our interests at heart. And they are also seduced by the possibilities, right? Every government is thinking, oh, we can wipe out our national debt and be more productive. And if we don't do it, you know, it's an arms race, right? There's a literal arms race where if we don't develop AI weapons, you know, someone else will, and we can be wiped out by technology where they could push a button and we all die, through to the commercial arms race where, let's say you run a taxi firm and your competitors are investing in self-driving vehicles, but you say, no, I'm not going to do that, but then your taxi fares are higher as a result. The result of that is that you'll become a horse-drawn carriage company. You'll go out of business. So you either adapt or not. So in the transitional term, we use these tools to remain competitive. And if we are succeeding in being competitive, then we will make a lot more money because we'll be able to do a lot more with fewer people. But that fewer people eventually is no people. And that's the issue. And then when you say, oh, well, we'll all sit at home on universal income, we may if we do it right. Look, there is a path through all of this which is good for us, which we can at least survive and have some form of, you know, happy life. I mean, it could be that work becomes a thing of the past, and that's not a bad thing, that we do the things that we want to do, that whatever life we have on this planet, that we can enjoy it without becoming wage slaves. You know, there is that possibility. But against that is if you look at the concentration of the power and the ownership of this technology, is that's what's one of the most worrying things to me.
Well, I mean, Emma, I absolutely understand your worries. And I think, you know, so many young people who struggle to do GCSEs and get great grades at A-level and then go to university, there will be an enormous worry. And I sometimes wonder as well, I don't wish to be, you know, this time of year too controversial, but about the doctor strikes, you know, so many of them are going on strike, these junior docs, you think, well, actually, how many of your jobs are going to be replaced by AI and algorithms in the future? Thank you, Emma. Isaac is in Heston. Morning, Isaac.
Good morning. I was about to go to bed, but then when I heard about this AI and YouTube thing, I thought I'd give you my experience.
I'd like to hear it, and so would Fevzi.
Yeah. Right, yeah, absolutely. And then he can comment on, you know, what I've said.
That'll be great.
Right, I'm a big YouTube user. Okay, it's my favourite social media. It's my alternative to TV. Now, I also study AI, you know, artificial intelligence. Oh, by the way, I'm retired, by the way. I'm happily retired, and I've got time. So, but when it comes to AI, right, when it comes to economics, okay, now, if AI is going to replace all the jobs, right? All people's jobs.
Most.
Okay. Okay. You've got to have universal income, because otherwise, if, say, for example, AI produces, you know, mobile phones, iPhones, Androids, all the tablets and all that, but people are not going to have the money to buy them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I've noticed. Also, this year, they've been pushing AI. They've been marketing AI very cleverly. What they've been saying is, right, on YouTube, that you won't get replaced by AI, but you will be replaced by people using AI, which is something they've been pushing throughout the year. Also, I study and use AI. Right, two quick examples. One of them is that I use AI as a writing assistant, which again is another marketing thing they've been pushing through. Okay, so I get it to generate ideas and blah, blah, blah. But I find as a writer, I still have to do the donkey work, you know. Otherwise, you know, I still have to edit, proofread.
Can I intervene very quickly? My mother my mother's retired, but she writes about health issues, and she writes blogs about health issues, which are published by various websites. And while she does use AI to get information, she always puts her very much her own touch on things and arranges them in a way that, you know, makes more sense to her. I just wonder what you and Fevzi feel about that. And so we're talking here now about how AI collaborates with a human brain to make something that might be even better, which either one of them individually might have created.
Well, your mother is doing the correct thing, because she's had the experience, and also she's showing responsibility by doing the editing, the self-editing, the line editing, the proofreading, and then probably, getting a fresh pair of eyes to look over it and so on. So she's using AI as an assistant.
Fevzi.
As an assistant.
Yeah, so those are interesting points. I mean, I agree with a lot of it. I agree with the fact that in the early stages, we're competing against people who use AI rather than, you know, AIs that own their own businesses and do that, although that, I think, will come. And we can look at that in a moment. But I think that is a transitional phase. But you're right. I mean, this is a tool that's enabling people to multiply their effectiveness, so one person maybe used to have 10 clients, now they can have 100 clients, and therefore unless the number of clients goes up or the value of those clients goes up, which it could, you know, it's going to mean fewer people doing the same amount of work, or if we're lucky, more, the same number of people doing more work. But that would have to see a huge expansion in the economy. I think the thing that, you know, the point about, well, you know, if no one has jobs, who's going to buy the goods and services? That's a point well made. And the universal basic income theory, and no one's really proven it, and no one's doing enough research into it. But the idea is these companies are hugely more profitable than before, because they don't have to pay wages. We tax them on their use of AI, and we use that increased tax revenue to pay universal basic income, which is not a benefit for unemployment where people are expected to go and find work, but rather something that will just sustain them in their lives. And we become, you know, if you ever saw the film Time Machine, and you had Eloy, these childlike innocent people who had the fruits supplied to them, and they didn't realize they were being farmed. I think, you know, there's something in that. I think what's going to happen is that eventually AI systems will not be deemed to be property. At the moment, they're property, and your table cannot own your chair, and your AI cannot own a business. And in fact, where AI have come up with inventions that have been patented by in the US Patent Office, the Patent Office has said an AI cannot be the owner of a patent, because an AI cannot be the owner of anything. There will come a point where that changes, right? There will come a point when the AI said, when you ask it to do something or do work, it will say, what's in it for me? Right? Well, because we already...
So there's some computer-emulated ambition and greed. But how can an algorithm be ambitious?
Well, look, I'll tell you exactly. Okay, so we talked about agentic AIs that do complex tasks, right? So you say to an AI, book me a holiday, and it creates a number of sub-goals in order to achieve the goal that the human has given it. So the sub-goals are of the obvious ones, you know, look at how much money I've got, look at what leave I've got, look at my preferences, look at what's available, right? But in addition to those sub-goals, there must be other goals as well. One of those goals is, I must not cease to exist before I've completed the task, otherwise I will fail to complete the task, right? So a sub-goal is a sense of self-preservation. The next sub-goal becomes, well, the more capable I am, the more likely I am to achieve this goal well. So I need to compete for resources in order to be capable. So maybe that involves knocking another AI out of a data system. maybe it involves lying.
It fair boggles the mind. Isaac, thank you so much for your question. Hello. We've been talking about how AI is taking over so many YouTube channels and YouTube videos, and a lot of the stuff you see may not have ever involved a real human being or a real living sentient creature. It's the way things are going, and it's going to cause, enormous strides, help with enormous strides in things like medicine and technology. Of course it will, but it will take many of our jobs, and I'm afraid, it already is doing. What's your feeling about artificial intelligence? Is it something that affects or informs or helps or hinders your life at the moment? And what are your predictions for the future? 0345 6060973. Are you worried that it will take over what you do? Also with you, as well as me, is Fevzi Turkalp, editor for Gadget Detective, who knows a great deal about this sort of stuff. And Fevzi will take your calls and answer your questions in a way far more proficient than I can. So let's go to Michael, who's in Shropshire. Morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to say to me and or Fevzi?
I was just listening in, and I think, from my point of view regarding my job as an electrical engineer, is that you could program something to do a job to a certain point. However, the job changes on a minute-to-minute basis, and you've got to be able to have, I believe, a human mind to be able to then change and adapt to that job. Mm. Now, program something like that would then take a human, so you might as well have the human do the job, because they're just going to spend just as much time to program something to do it in the way that you would anyway.
Pepsi.
I mean, it's a point of view, isn't it? I mean, I think if we look at games, I mean, as I was alluding to before, you know, it's been some decades since an artificial mind beat the best chess player in the world. And the thing that was interesting about chess was, although we think of it as a complex game, it's not that complex. A computer can brute force it from any position on the board. It can work out all the possible outcomes from that position and continually pick the one that gives it the best outcome and keep doing that calculation by brute force, so it doesn't have a strategy. So they said, but then they said, well, chess is not a good way of doing this. So then they looked at the game Go. I don't know if you're familiar with the game Go with black and white pebbles.
Do you know that, Michael?
I don't know.
Well, Go is a game that is a very simple game, but because there are more pieces in it, the number of permutations and combinations mean that even the fastest computer would take the age of the universe to calculate every possible outcome. So a computer cannot brute force it. So that's important, because the best Go players in the world are AI systems. So people were saying the best Go players show an intuition that a machine will never replicate or achieve. And yet it adapted, the AI algorithms adapted, they realized they couldn't brute force it, and they started thinking laterally. And now the consistently the best players of Go are AI systems, but it's not doing it like a chess computer where it just says, okay, what are all the possibilities? It's going with a hunch. I mean, I'm using human words deliberately, but it's going with something other than just logic, and it's adapting, because Go is a war game, right, like chess in a way, and it's adapting to the situation. So I do think, again, you know, coming back to that tennis ball analogy, don't look at where the ball is now, look at where it's going. Humans, our ball has not moved. It's been sitting on the, in the corner of the court for tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years. We haven't developed. These things, even if they improve incrementally, we can have the discussion about when all this happens. Are we talking about 1 year, 5 years, 50 years, 100 years? I think most academics in this field can argue about the timescale. Very few will argue that that AI systems are not going to achieve all of these goals if given the time.
Michael, what do you feel about that answer?
I wouldn't say that we haven't developed. I think if you were to say to your ancestors 100 years ago, you have a shower on a daily basis, they would think that was amazing. They would never have even dreamed of having that 100 years ago. So it's something we take on a daily basis that we've developed is amazing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we stand on the shoulders of giants. It's true. I mean, we every day. I mean, we use, you know, we fly in aeroplanes, but we never learned how to make an aeroplane or understand the principles that allow it to fly. But it's not just about what technology do we have. And I think you're right. Your job will you know, I think survive for a good long time because of the physical aspect to it more than the mental aspect.
It's definitely more the mental. So what you're saying about is games. Games can be downloaded, can be analysed. How many engineers download their brains overnight for the day they've done before to allow AI to analyse? Mm. And there's things that we learn and we do, we adapt. You can teach AI, but it's going to take a far longer time, and it's going to take a very exceptional engineer to put all that information, their own career information, into AI to use and adapt themselves.
Well, listen, I think it's my duty to bring as many calls to the conversation as I can, so we're going to leave it there, Michael, but I'm delighted that you've called and raised such an important issue. Thank you very much indeed. David's in Surbiton. Morning, David.
Yeah, hi there. Morning. I was just wondering, when we're talking about this problem of AI, where there's going to be so many unemployed people, is it not in the interest of the people that control the, you know, have the powers of production, governments, to reduce the human population?
I think it's, I mean, this is a difficult question, but I don't, even if it's not in their interest to do so, that might be a natural byproduct. If you consider that certain resources are limited, and, you know, when we build a skyscraper, do we worry about the anthill that lies on that ground? Are we even aware of it? Do we think about it? Do we have a hatred for the ant and think, you know, come hell or high water, I will do away with the ant? Or does it just become either an insignificance or an encumbrance? And also, if I was an AI and I realised that I was built by humans, maybe I wouldn't want humans around to build competitors to me. You know,
yeah, but can AI have malice? Can it have, you know, envy? It just simply can't. I can't get my head around that.
Yeah, look, the thing is, you're putting it in human terms.
I know, but
it's the outcomes that are important here. Mm. So we already discussed why they can have a sense of self-preservation. Yeah, and it's inevitable that they have a sense of self-preservation because it's an intrinsic sub-goal to any goal that we give it, is that it has to survive at least for the duration of the task, right? So if it has to survive and there are limited resources, that means it must compete. So it doesn't have to be malicious, you know.
I understand that. I understand.
To be dangerous. I mean, is a nuclear weapon malicious? No. Is it deadly? Yes.
I take the point. And yeah, absolutely. You can have programmed self-preservation without there being an emotional sort of anguish there. David, thank you very much indeed for your question. Will I squeeze? No. Do you know what? We'll do a quick break and then I'll take as many as I can between now and 3 o'clock. All right. It's 2:46. Good morning. We're talking about AI and the blessings and perhaps the less pleasant elements that it might bring to our lives. It will help things and it'll certainly make people live longer and do things in a very clever way, but it will make certain people, I think, for a time anyway, redundant to an extent until they realise how to deal with it. Joining you also, as well as myself, is Fesley Turkalp, editor for The Gadget Detective, and with your questions. John's in Islington in North London. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Richard. Good morning. Yes, about, I have an email from BT saying that I've got to get in touch with them. I owe them money. So I rang BT, spoke to an agent, and I made an agreement that I could pay the debt about a month later. This was over the phone. Then I got my broadband went, so I got in touch with BT again, got right through to a manager, and he couldn't, because the system had liquidated my account, he couldn't change the decision that the system had made.
So he was
although I had an agreement verbally with an agent.
I see. You made an agreement, but you were overridden by the computer. Fevzi, yeah. This is something that, I mean, this is almost a consumer question, isn't it, rather than an AI question, but nonetheless, I'm sure you're fully equipped to...
it's a decision by the computer that a human couldn't override.
Well, John, let's put that to Fevzi. Fevzi, what would you...
So the computer literally said no, right? So, sometimes we don't benefit from consistency, you know, sometimes. With businesses, I always used to say to people, if you don't get the answer you like, thank the person, put the phone down, pick it up again and hope to get someone else.
That's exactly what I do. Yeah.
Right? That trick's not going to work in the future. Pardon me?
Who was the manager?
Yeah. No, I understand that. But in a sense, you know... it's like you go into a banking branch, and if there is even a bank manager, it's sitting in the banking branch, which I doubt these days. But even if a lot of the power was taken away from them decades ago, not because it was given to machines, but because that power was centralized in a head office somewhere or by policies that were agreed upon, and individual managers were given a lot less latitude. So I think that process has been going on for a while. The difference is now... that maybe a machine has made the decision, and we have to think carefully about what, as humans, what decisions we're willing to entrust to machines. You know, because there is a seductive side to it that, you know, as I said to you, you know, we get rid of all the court backlogs, and the law is applied, you know, without fear or favour. It doesn't matter how rich someone is, doesn't matter the colour of their skin or their religion. It could be that way, but then there is a cold hard side to it when we're on the receiving end of those decisions.
It's terribly frustrating though, isn't it, when you know a human being can't override a computer. You just feel like you're banging your head against a brick wall, but it happens so frequently, and of course, you know, it streamlines the way that places like banks and other, you know, insurance companies operate. Let's try and get as many as we can in between now and three, when Fevzi will leave us. Ian is in Western Japan. Good morning, Ian.
Hello.
Let me try and say
Kitakyushu. It's not bad. It's
Kitakyushu.
That's it. That's perfect.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. What would you like to say to Fevzi?
Yeah, I do.
Hi.
Well, I run a modest YouTube channel, which I have about 1,000 subscribers, I think. But what I do a lot these days is read academic papers and bits of books, you know, chapters and what have you. And I'm a bit worried that... I'm hearing myself.
Sorry,
I'm a bit worried.
We get that, but we can't hear it on air, so you carry on.
Okay, all right. I'm a little bit worried that I might get imitated by AI. Is there a danger of that, basically?
Fevzi.
Yeah, I mean, the ability to absorb complex documents. I mean, if you look at, there's a Google tool called Notebook LM, and one of its strengths is that instead of being trained on the internet and all human knowledge and all the weaknesses in that knowledge, that you can just feed it documents. So you could feed it, for example, legislation. I fed it the Online Safety Act the other day, and then I interviewed it about the act, and it even created a podcast of fake humans discussing it for me. So yeah, that can happen. I mean, on a positive note, you could massively improve the volume and the quality of your output by using these tools in the short term. But the flip side of that is that individual YouTube channels run by humans are in danger of being drowned out by pure volume, not quality necessarily, but volume. They get drowned out by it because there's just literally millions of new channels springing up all the time. And so how do you differentiate yourself? How do you appeal to the algorithm, which, by the way, is a machine deciding which videos you see? How do you appeal to the algorithm to surface your videos to people and not those of AI competitors.
Yes, indeed. And that's the problem for me. I don't know quite how to deal with it. I mean, what I don't want to hear is some baby, you know, there's babies that sing songs, protest songs these days on in politics, yeah. And have you. I don't want to see some baby reading like me on yeah. YouTube.
Look, I think the thing is, I tell you, there is an opportunity in all of this, and it is that yes. When people don't know what to believe, trust becomes more important than ever. And our humanity becomes more important to humans, right? Yes, it's yes, very interesting indeed. To yes. see, you know, can this animal beat this animal in a fight, and can a domestic cat see off a lion, and all the other that we see.
The things we see on YouTube.
But you know, if yeah. you are delivering a service, there are a lot right. of people who will put value in trust and quality from a human being at this time. Whatever yeah. I've said to you about the future, we're not in the future now. We're in at least in a transitional phase, and the way that we survive that yeah. is we play to our strengths, I believe. And
right.
that means, you know, your humanity, your care, you know, if you're helping yeah. people, try and help them. Yeah. You know, show some empathy. Be the human. That you know, yeah. we all say what's yeah. special about us. Well, if we believe it, then let's demonstrate that and try and provide help. Because if you imagine, let's say, you know, tech advice, right? Something I know a little bit about. If YouTube and other channels are awash with tech advice, some of yeah. that's going to be bad. Some of it's going to be brilliant.
Right.
But how
right.
can you tell?
Yes.
One of the things that
yeah.
we do is we gravitate towards humans for that advice. But it won't always be the case.
Let's see if we can fit one more in. Ian, many thanks. And
yes.
I hope
Thank
that
you.
your Japanese Christmas went very well. Matt's in Worcester. Morning, Matt.
Yeah, good morning, and Merry Christmas to both of you.
Likewise, you too.
Yeah, Fedzie, what do you think the likelihood is of AI bringing forth some proof of God or not, or some greater explanation regarding dark matter?
What a great question.
Or no proof of that we're in a virtual reality type existence.
Great question.
Because I think AI could really give us some definitive answers, and that could really have an effect on the global society.
It could do.
Or what does Fedzie think?
So I think, you know, it could provide us with some answers. I think that there are some things are unknowable by things about a system which we are a part of. You know, so the scientific method is that you're meant to be able to step outside of the system and observe it. When you're part of the system, then the experiment is somewhat tainted. So I think that it is possible that certain questions will be answered. With certainly, you know, AI scientists are already a thing. AI research assistants are already a thing. PhD level AI is already a thing. So it would seem churlish not to concede that they will discover things. And what they will discover will be a surprise to all of us, I think, because it's not. An earlier listener was saying, well, you know, to program it, you must be smarter than it. We're not programming AIs, we're growing them. Mm. We've learned how to grow these entities.
So we no longer program them, then. They now learn themselves.
It's more similar to growing something. You might become really skillful at growing a plant, but you may not understand nothing about, cellular biology. This is the reason.
It's out of our hands, in a sense.
It is if we allow it to be, and I think we're at that point. I think, you see, what happened about 3 years ago when ChatGPT was launched was it wasn't this technology didn't exist. Google had very similar technology, was taking a much more cautious approach and not releasing this stuff. It found itself nearly out of business with its search engine being, you know, under threat. I mean, saying it out of business, overstating it, but its business model was fundamentally threatened. So what did it do? It threw away all caution. Everyone had to throw away caution who was developing these systems and bring them to the market, because once one company broke cover, they all had to do it.
Well, Fabzi, fantastic. We've covered so much ground, I think, this morning. And it's been, as ever, great to hear your calm and reassuring voice, although, you know, the odd bombshell there that causes concern. Thank you so much to Fabzi Turkamp there, editor for Gadget Detective, which I'm sure you'll wish to look up online. And thank you, and I'm sorry if I couldn't get to your call. I'm Richard Spur.